So welcome, everyone. This is a fantastic turnout. I'm just absolutely delighted. Normally Howard Burton, the executive director of Perimeter Institute, officiates at our public events, but unfortunately Howard is not able to be with us tonight, and so I've been sent in his stead. I'm Richard Epp. I'm director of outreach programs at Perimeter Institute. So we're delighted to have with us tonight Bob and Ellen Kaplan, both from the University of Harvard. Bob received his master's degree in mathematics at the University of Harvard, and Ellen received her master's degree in classical archaeology, also at Harvard. Disturbed by the poor quality and low level of math education in the U.S., of course, we don't have any such problem here in Canada, Bob and Ellen founded the Math Circle at Harvard in 1994. Its unusual approach to mathematics is now spreading across America and Great Britain. Bob's book, The Nothing That Is, A Natural History of Zero, was published by Oxford University Press in 2000. Together, they wrote The Art of the Infinite, The Pleasures of Mathematics, which Oxford published last year. They're now finishing a book on the math circle to be called Out of the Labyrinth, Mathematics Set Free, also Oxford University Press. At the same time, Ellen is also writing a book with their son Michael on probability to be titled Dancing with the Data and published by Viking Press. So I got a sneak preview of what's in store for us tonight, okay, but I promise I didn't look at the handouts so to spoil the surprise for myself. And I can assure you that we're in for an absolutely delightful treat. So please join me in welcoming Bob and Ellen Kaplan for an evening of the magic of mathematics.
Thanks to the Perimeter Institute. Thanks to all of you for coming out to play mathematics with us, the way one plays music together in the evening. Everything in mathematics touches the infinite. It rings with the infinite. If you read that the square on the hypotenuse of a right triangle is equal to the sum of the squares on the two legs, that great theorem of Pythagoras, that's true of every right triangle. Whether it's skinny or squat, whether it's here or in Timbuktu or on Alpha Centauri, it was true before Pythagoras discovered it. It'll be true through the infinite stretches of future time, because mathematics is our one sure channel to the eternal. Are its discoveries only the property of some select priesthood? Mathematics has long had that reputation, and most of us, fearing or loathing it while it ruined our school days, believe that this is so, but it's not. Mathematics is a human invention. It's been invented by us, for us. It belongs to us all. It springs from our finite brains to the infinite. It's our lost native language.
If you're not convinced by that, and you don't look as if you thought it was your lost native language, perhaps it's because the way math tends to be taught, which is often remote, and no longer from math books like this one, which was written by Mahavira in 9th century India. If you've got a problem like this, one night in a month of the spring season, a certain young lady was lovingly happy with her husband in a big mansion.
Sorry.
There we go. It just needs a screw there. Well, try this. So she was lovingly happy with her husband in a big mansion, white as the moon, set in a pleasure garden with trees bent down with flowers and fruits, resonant with the sweet sound of parrots, cuckoos, and bees, which were all intoxicated with the honey of the flowers. Ready for the math? Then, on a love quarrel arising between husband and wife, her pearl necklace was broken. One third of the pearls were collected by the maidservant. One sixth fell on the bed. then half of what remained, and half of what remained thereafter, and again one half of what remained thereafter, and so on, six times in all, fell scattered everywhere. 1,161 pearls were left on the string. How many pearls had there been on the necklace? There'll be a test at the end of class.
But what we're going to do, what you're going to be doing, is that act of invention, which is mathematics, the kind of invention that when you look back on it, as you will at 8:30, you'll say it was discovery, that it was out there all the time, but you will have invented this. This is what we're going to be doing is a math circle class with you. In our math circles, this would occur over 10 one-hour classes, but you're all very bright, so we'll do this in our allotted time. Our approach is simple. We don't tell anybody anything. They tell us. We're their dumb friends at the blackboard. And we let our students loose on attractive problems, which begin with the familiar world, the close at hand, and move with the mind steadily toward the horizon. No pressure of time, no rewards, no grades, no competition. Just congenial conversation with 500 people. And in these conversations, that other kind of infinity opens up, the infinity of human speculation and invention. So, while focusing on this intriguing bit of mathematics, we hope that you'll see it, the problem that we'll be working on, and what we're going to be doing with it, as an example of mathematical invention in general, with its troughs of doubt and its crest of insight, an example, too, of what our classes with six-year-olds and teenagers and adults are like, day in and day out. Okay, so that's the context. And now here's an accessible mystery. Very simple, very straightforward. By the way, should anyone here happen to have mulled over this problem on his or her own before, just keep your counsel, please, so that the rest of us can enjoy trying to come to grips with it. So here's the question. Can you tile a rectangle with squares, all of different sizes? You've got a rectangle. You want to cover it with squares, tiling it the way you would tile your patio, and no two squares can be the same size.
That's a significant part. It's obviously easy to do if they're all the same size.
I think what you should have, you should each have now your own rectangle. So let's... You get to take this home with you.
Take care.
We also have a lot of pencils, thanks to the Perimeter Institute. I don't know how many. This is not a counting problem, but we give you a bag and ask you to pass them around. While this is happening, do give us some suggestions. Do give us some suggestions, wild or not, about whether a rectangle can be tiled with incongruent squares. So, we've got a rectangle, you've got a rectangle. Can you or can't you cover it with squares, all of different sizes, no two squares the same size? Suggestions? Yes, no, neither, both. Yes.
If the ratio of the two sizes is like a transcendental number like pi, I'm not sure if it's possible. But
That's a great suggestion. If the two sides, the long and the short, are in a ratio which is not a natural number, which might be an irrational or even a transcendental, as you suggest, like pi, then it might. Then you said you're not sure whether it's possible, suggesting that it might well be possible if that weren't the case. Okay.
So if this were 2 by 5. It's clear that you're going to be able to fit a bunch of squares into it. They don't look much like squares, but we know that they actually are squares. But if this, instead of being we'd have a serious problem dividing pi up into, how many ones are there in pi? We're already in difficulties, and so, but that's if we're doing them all the same size. Maybe we can cheat. So we can say there are three ones in pi, and then there are smaller ones that you get to fill up the spaces with.
Also, the tiles themselves don't have to be a whole number by a whole number. They have to be squares, but they could be weird squares, pi by pi, or I don't know, something like that. But we do want to cover the entire rectangle with squares, all of different sizes. Yes?
Does it have to be a finite number of squares?
Oh, what a good question. I don't know, what would you like? Mathematics is freedom. You're free to do what you'd like. The question was, do you have to do this with a finite number of squares? I said, your choice. This gentleman suggests it might be easier to do it if there were an infinite number of squares. How? I'm very responsive. I'm very sensitive to hands going up.
You have an infinite number of squares since you don't actually have to make them. You just have to imagine them so you can keep on imagining.
I see a hand there. Yes, sir. Oh, what a nice idea. Make the first square have a side length that of the short side. So in that way, you've done as much as you can with one square. Now you've just got some stuff left over to finish up with. And then reiterate. Is this going to be a finite or an infinite number of squares, do you think? I'm hearing infinite from my left. I'm hearing, not sure what I'm hearing from the middle. I saw a hand, however, over here. Yes.
Infinite.
Sounds infinite because somebody said iterate. Do the same thing with what's left, and then the same thing with... That's square number one, square number two. Now what?
We got a problem.
Well, you could make little squares in there. They don't have to go all the way out to the edge. They don't have to be in a ratio, right. The patio that you're tiling, you just want it to look like a crazy patio with squares of different sizes. No two the same size, but any ratio you'd like.
Where would you like square number three? I'm at your service. Bottom left-hand corner of the unnumbered.
And how big would you like it?
Smallish?
Smallish.
One standard smallish square.
Now, step back for a minute and look at this. It's wonderful so far. We're on the way. We've covered most of it. We have an L shape left. Is that good or bad? What do you think? It doesn't feel too comfortable. What do you suggest? By the way, keep checking. Is this it might not be possible. We might be on our way to proving that this cannot be done. Where should the fourth square go, or where's your intuition pushing you about what we should do, what the outcome will be?
Make a second box that is the same size as the number two, and then divide that into the last piece that's going to be 11.
Okay, so go above number three?
Above number two, make the same size as number two, but don't divide that one. Divide the little one, the rectangle on the top, then the next one.
So we get rid of three?
Yeah.
And will your third box be the same size as number two?
No, but you're not going to use that for this.
All good.
For example, three, which is going to be the
okay. Nice idea. This comes up in mathematics all the time. If you have a useful fiction, you do something which is going to aid something else. You're not going to use it itself. This gentleman suggests making a box above number two, the same size as number two. This is high technology here at Erasing the Dream. And the box that's going to be made will be the same size as two, but we won't use it. We won't call it a square. We'll deal instead with what's left above it and do
the same thing as we did before,
and we'll worry about this middle thing later. Yeah. Another very good strategy in mathematics, you keep pushing the darkness back into the corner of the room. You look where the light is. Okay, so up there is number three. Really, it's your number three that's been moved up into a corner. Sorry, say it again?
Four
to the left of three. Bigger, smaller, same size as? Sorry, smaller?
Then I'm afraid it will be have one side the same size as three.
And they're squares, so it's going to be... To be a different size from any of the other tiles, it's going to have to either be smaller or larger than three. Which would you like to try? Larger. Try one larger. Up where three is.
Do we think that's a square?
Oh, that's a good question. How do you know that's a square? Well, take the horizontal length at the top, whatever that was, and copy that vertically. So that's now a square.
Well, I don't know I'd buy it if someone were selling it as a square.
Well, true. Well, you...
Yeah.
Sorry, say it again? Okay. Oh, you're part of the common mind here. Well, it seems to me we could, if three didn't go more than halfway of that vacant space, this new square four will have a side different from that of three. It hangs down a little bit below it. Now we've got a weird shape, rather the weird shape we had before, the L-shaped room. True. Is that good or bad?
It's okay.
What should we do now? Is this going to lead to an infinite or a finite number of tiles? Probably an infinite.
I'm still worried about what's going to happen here.
At this point, consult your intuition. What are you tending toward? This is going to work? This is not going to work? Yes, don't. Not going to work. Okay, why is it not going to work? Because we keep getting these awkward shapes? Well, we'll keep filling the awkward shapes. Say more about why it's not going to work.
No, just simply it was intuition, and yeah, you're going to continue, even with an infinite number, I don't think, you'll still, however small, continually be met by that problem of the L.
Okay, even if there were an infinite number, I guess if there were an infinite number, we'd need some kind of a method to see how they're forming, so we'd know that whatever we started finitely could continue infinitely. But you're saying even then, even if they're an infinite number, we're going to run into... We're going to run into a kind of problem. If you can say what the kind of problem is, this is another strategy in mathematics. It's been formalized to be called obstruction theory. You look to see where the difficulties are. And you say, okay, here's the difficulty. Maybe the difficulty itself tells me how to do it or that it can't be done. Is the difficulty the L-shapeness? Yes.
Well, it's not a rectangle, which is the problem we started with.
Hmm. Can't put a square peg in a rectangular hole. Aren't you glad we didn't start with a circle? Yes.
It'd be better if we
better just to start with a square first.
Oh, yes.
Okay, our question, you remember, was can you tile a rectangle with non-congruent squares? A square is a kind of rectangle.
Consider it that.
Why not start with a square and see if we could, that might be easier.
You could make congruent squares.
Oh, okay. Ah, I got you. What this gentleman is suggesting is we're aiming for a rectangle, but forget the rectangle for a while. Start with a square and start building other size squares around it until the moment comes when all of a sudden the rectangles you've built have made, the squares you've built have made a rectangular patio. Nice idea. Sort of the reverse direction. Yes?
I think this may be a stupid idea.
There are no stupid ideas.
Could you layer other squares on top of other squares to cover the whole area of the rectangle at some point?
That's a wonderful idea. You notice how vague our original question was. We said, can you tile a rectangle with non-congruent squares? We didn't say a finite or an infinite number of them. We didn't say you couldn't pile them up. Maybe you could simply overlap them. And is your suggestion that by overlapping, you could then begin to tease them apart or look through the overlapping and see a square tiling with no overlaps? Or do it with overlapped squares? After all, we didn't say you couldn't. Could we tile some sort of rectangle with overlapped squares of different sizes? You're nodding yes. Why? Great. I think it's a terrific idea. The restrictions that have made this seem difficult are gone. Put down a square like square number one. Put down a different size square number two that's overlapping it somewhat.
Have to deal with this unpleasant corner where only a size three square would fit. Right. I will just put a very large flagstone sitting there called seven.
Geez, I am creative.
It's clear it's going to work with overlapped squares. Three squares will do any rectangle. One won't. Two.
Are you going to let it overlap the outside of the room?
Ah, good. Didn't say you couldn't.
You have to stay inside the room. Three squares will do it.
Fine. Three squares will do it if you allow overlapping. We've gotten an answer to our problem. If we remove a lot of the implicit, not explicit, restrictions that we made. Okay, let's put those restrictions in. Now let's say no overlapping, because we've got an answer. You can now write a paper which begins, can a rectangle be tiled with non-congruent squares? Yes, if you allow overlapping of the squares, you can be done with three.
It's called the tippy rectangle.
There's a solution for the square, I think.
Yes?
If you have a square, and you divide it in half, then the left half is one.
Yes.
In the right half, you divide that in half, and the bottom is two. In the top half, you divide that in half with a vertical, and the left one is three. Keep going. You've got an infinite series that goes infinitely to an infinitesimally close answer.
Wow. Okay. A rectangle tiled with non-overlapping squares.
No, we're starting with a square this time.
Starting with a square. A square to be tiled with non-overlapping squares, an infinite number. Your suggestion was first put in which corner would you like?
How about one tile?
Ah, marvelous. There we are. You can tile a square with non-congruent squares if you're talking about one of them, because it's not congruent to any other one.
That's a good old joke. How many balls of string does it take to reach to the moon?
Right. Okay, we now have our second answer. Yes, you can tile a square with a certain finite number of non-congruent squares, namely one itself. Okay, let's up the ante. We want to tile a square with more than one non-overlapping, this sounds like some lawyer's clauses. One square to be tiled with more than one non-overlapping squares, and your suggestion was make an infinite
a square of half the size? Was that how we begin?
Yes? Oh, what's the suggestion? Do you want to start with a rectangle? Okay, start with a rectangle and cut it. Cut the biggest possible square out of it, the way we began, and then start this infinite series of... By the way, we now have a lot of things on hold. We'll come back to squares, I promise you. So there's the biggest square you can fit in, side length, the short side. Now what? The person who suggested this, what would you like us to do next?
Why don't we do what we were doing up top on the board at the front, just make the next biggest square, number two.
Okay.
Then make another space like two, but cut it in four. You've got four squares.
Great.
Then do three and its sister next to it, cut it in four, and keep going. And I guess it's infinite, but you're sure going to get close.
Should we go back to this one?
Yeah.
Back to your...
Okay, we came to a crash here because we had two, and then we couldn't see what could be the next biggest.
What we're doing now is what you do when you do mathematics. You take... Is it two steps forward and one back, or two steps back and one forward? I'm not quite sure which it is, whether we're getting somewhere or not. But we've certainly begun to narrow in our focus on the problem. Yes?
Take square number two and move it up so there's a gap above and a gap below.
So I'm sort of halfway up? Or
not exactly.
Would, yeah.
Good. That was a trick question. And now begin with those two different areas to get the largest square in possible, and so on. Does that and so on make sense?
Well, three in the middle as well. We'll keep on doing that. Okay. So we move. Square three over there. It shouldn't, it wasn't meant to be.
There's now we've got three places to work on, and we work on each of them in the same way, putting in the middle, or not at the top or bottom of each, a new square. There's the top to deal with also. Is this going to work? At this point, mathematics isn't usually done by popular vote, but how many people here would that it were? I'm not sure about that. Could you just raise your hands? How many people here think this is going to work? Or something is going to work? There's only one optimist in the audience? Two, three, okay. There was a question over here? Yes.
Ultimately, I think what we need to do is get the infinite number of squares such that their areas add up to the area of the original rectangle. Mm. Now, when you do that, that means the n number of squares will keep on increasing, whereas the sides will keep on decreasing to a point where they tend towards zero. And then we're getting into either complex numbers or irrational numbers. And I think at that time, we probably won't be able to solve that then. Just reaching out.
Very nice suggestion. I think there are actually lots of suggestions of what you said. One, that we replace our geometric approach, or maybe add to it, by a an algebraic approach, looking at an infinite series and the terms of it. Two, that those terms might converge toward a number which might be irrational. Is that an issue? That came up at the very beginning. Would it be a problem if one of the sides was irrational? All we want to do is cover this with squares, but that's something to worry about. It makes it sound less and less possible. Well, what mathematics does is to tell us how the world behaves. It may behave in such a way that this is not possible in our world, and we'll be able to prove that. And that will be perhaps a disappointing, but a very definite result. You'll be able to go home and tell your friends, and they'll tell their children, their grandchildren, no, you cannot tile your patio, your rectangular or your square patio, with an infinite number of non-congruent squares.
Well, that's something. Just as well, because they don't have them at the lumberyard.
Or perhaps you can. Yes.
What I was thinking was, we started off with number one where it was, and number two down in the bottom corner where it was. The first time we did number three, we put it up in a corner that wasn't out to the edge of the patio. So my suggestion is keep working in a spiral.
Oh.
So that everything is always pushed out to the edge of the patio at all times.
It's a really nice idea. Instead of having an infinite series that might decrease like this, big square, lesser, 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 leaving stuff up above you might have to worry about, perhaps one can spiral around and worry about the edges as we approach them. Or maybe like a spiral nebula, it'll send stuff off to fill up the corners. But it's a nice idea. It begins to now sound, am I speaking for the public, that an infinite tiling might be possible. It's amazing how in mathematics you go back and forth.
Should three go in this whirling corner here, or should three go out? Okay.
We've got our L-shaped room back, but
it should be more than half.
You're shaking your head. You don't think that's good. You're worried about that.
I thought the idea was to leave the outside free and
just look. Okay, leave the outside free. Move that toward the middle. And in general, from here on, we'll build toward the middle and let the outside take care of itself.
I think that infinite series is possible if the ratio of the long side to the short side is root of 2.
Wow. Wow. If the width to the length is square root of 2 to 1, then conceivably, does the person who suggested this have continued fractions in mind? Then conceivably, this might work. Now you've raised a whole new issue. Our very vague question at the beginning was, can a rectangle be so tiled? Maybe we should have said, maybe we're now being forced to say, which rectangles, if any, can be? Maybe only certain ones can be. Maybe only a rectangle where the ratios of sides are square root of 2 to 1. I should have made it 1 to square root of 2, shouldn't I? Because the 1 is shorter.
How about if you make it the golden ratio?
What about the golden ratio? That's the number which, if you take the series 1, the sequence 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21,
34.
Each new term is the sum of the two before. And then take the ratios of the adjacent numbers in here, 1 over 1, 2 over 1. 3 over 2, and so on, they approach something which is called the golden mean, the golden ratio, roughly 1.618, which is a number that comes up everywhere in nature, in nautilus shells, in pine cones, antlers of deer, seems to be everywhere. Conceivably, that kind of a rectangle where the ratio is 1 to this 1.618, maybe that you could tile because of the properties of that ratio. Maybe one square could be 1 by 1 and the next one by 2 by, well, how do we do that?
Take the first square,
yes?
Number 1, and cut it in half vertically.
Okay.
Put a dotted line halfway vertically on the original square.
Sorry, I missed that. I was too
Start
busy.
With a square.
Start mm-hmm. with a square.
So we go 3.
And divide it vertically in half with a dotted line. Or a solid line, I guess. Yeah. And then take a compass. Imagine a compass with the point on the middle of the bottom, right there, and the diagonal being to the corner just to the right where your finger is. Yeah, right there. Make that the radius and then draw an arc. Down a bit more, stop there, and go up there perpendicularly, and then make a rectangle out of that.
And so on.
And then put a square in the bottom of that. And then a square on the right side of the next rectangle, and then keep doing that, so you get your spiral.
This is rather like your method of building up the squares to get a rectangle. Ah. Do you have something tilted there?
No.
I like that. Well, a brand new idea. Mathematics is imagination. Why must we fit these squares in a square way? Why can't some of them, or all of them, be tilted? You have a little bit of trouble with triangles in the corner, but we can deal with that. Yes. Gentleman over here, yes.
I think if you start over and try to change your step, so that you find a place for two squares at a time. So basically you would take the shortest side of the rectangle, split it with a ratio that is not 1-to-1, and then place two squares and repeat that.
So how does that differ from starting with my first rectangle?
Tell us what we should do first.
Split it into, one half is 3 units, and one half is 9 units.
On the short side, we'll do it like 5 to 3.
Draw that line across. We have two rectangles.
Mm-hmm.
Draw two squares,
one of the size 3, 3. Mm-hmm. One of the size 5, 5.
Oh.
And
repeat with 2 every year. Right.
And just put them with a different ratio, or?
Same ratio.
Aha, 3 to 5 in there.
Mm-hmm.
This looks as if it might lead to an infinite tiling. I think we've got a tremendous number, at least 5, very good ideas for how to do this with an infinite number of tiles. The square root of 2-to-1 ratio, the golden mean ratio, this tiling in, you chose 5 and 3 because they're adjacent numbers in the Fibonacci sequence, or? Well, they look good. They look like good numbers. All of these, any of these, might lead to an infinite tiling. We're going to be perverse and say, look, you're not going to find an infinite number of tiles at your local pottery studio, even in Waterloo. So we are going to require there to be a finite number of tiles. And a rectangle. Yeah, sorry. Did you just come up with an infinite tiling? That'll be tomorrow. Can you tile a rectangle with an infinite, with a finite number of non-overlapping squares? Yes.
Hi. Does there actually have to be like a specific pattern, or couldn't you just like stick random squares in random places?
That's a great question.
They just have to end up covering the whole area. So we have to make sure that we don't stick them on and have little vacations. There's no grout That's you can't hide your problems. So.
I mean, you may be right. There may not be a... I mean, the mind goes for order. The mind goes for pattern. We've been getting nice patterns. Maybe we want something looser, let imagination free. Yes?
Can you take one of your square tiles and cut it in half into two rectangles?
Sure. Mm-hmm. And then?
So if you took your big number one square, and what you've got left is a rectangle, or eventually you're gonna eventually you can just take if you divide number two in half, like we did before, halfway up.
Okay.
Or some other space. Eventually you're gonna have two rectangles left, and if you can take a square and then divide it into some piece and then let that square cover whatever's left.
I mean, like over from here to here.
Yeah.
I think we wanted to end up with all looking like squares.
Yeah. I don't believe that it's possible.
Oh, good. Okay, we've got a firm opinion. Thank you.
No matter what you do.
We may be moving ourselves toward a proof that this can't be done, which is great. It's hard sometimes to prove that something can't be the case, but we may be coming down to that. After all, we've worked on this for almost half an hour.
But whatever you do, you keep multiplying the problem. You keep creating more rectangles. So you're just multiplying it.
It just doesn't look good. Every time we come up with a nice finite strategy, new awkward rectangles pop up. Yes?
I have an idea, but visually I can't see it.
Okay.
Who knows? Starting with a square, creating smack dab in the middle, and then adding, I'm thinking of a spiral of larger squares connected to that. Oh. So you'll have larger squares going outside, and then eventually you'll have to have a spiral of smaller squares coming from the outside in.
Wow. That's rather like your idea of building up to the rectangle. Start with a square, build up larger squares, you said around it.
Yeah, somehow I'm just...
That's good. Go on. Why don't we do one? So one is a square. Now you put a bigger square, number two.
I guess it could go smaller from the middle too, but a spiral of bigger squares to the out, and then another spiral of smaller squares working from out to in. I'm not sure.
That's really nice, because we may have some... As you said, hard to visualize this, but it's a nice strategy. You're calling it a spiral, I call it a windmill. It's these sort of, these paddles, these fans around the hub. Where's the smallest square going to be? If this is going to be a finite timing, where, can you say anything about where the smallest square must be or can't be? That's what's called a leading question. Empty space. It's like doing a jigsaw puzzle. You've got that last piece, and then it fits in there.
Okay,
why would that be the smallest?
I'm putting the smallest square there.
S for smallest. Question, is that possible? Yes.
Hello. I'm just listening generally to the audience, and it's mathematics. I'm just listening, and it becomes rather immediately apparent that there's no way this is going to work. What we're doing here is just trying anything that comes into us, and it ends up, it doesn't work out to the edges. We've even developed the line of thinking of if we go smaller and smaller and smaller, the remark was made, it would be infinitely smaller and infinitely close. Infinitely close is a failure. It has to work. You can't be infinitely close. Same as here, we're getting everything works to weird sizes as you work. It's not going to work.
Okay, good. You're saying close enough as no cigars. This has got to be worked perfectly. The kind of suggestions we've had, different strategies, are all inviting us into an infinite sequence of smaller and smaller squares, no matter how they're arranged, which will never fill it perfectly, so that this is simply not going to work, especially if we're saying, not infinite, make it a finite number. Now we're really stuck. Very nice point. I'd like to just go back, however, to my perhaps dumb question. If the smallest square in this finite tile ends up being in a corner, if it's possible to tile with a finite number of tiles, and the smallest square is in the corner, you're shaking your head. Why?
Because you have to have two larger squares.
Good. If the smallest square, I'll put all the ifs in, if you can tile a rectangle with a finite number of non-congruent squares, and if the smallest of them is in a corner, you've got to have two squares next to it, the less small. And what goes in there? It's going to have to be a square the same size as the smallest, and then we're stuck. We've got a huge conclusion. Get you in 1 second. Huge conclusion. If it can be tiled, if a rectangle can be tiled with a finite number of different size squares, the smallest one, and it's got to be a smallest one, can't be in the corner. Wow. That's publishable. Yes.
Could you do squares until you're out of space? Just keep doing them over and over again to do so space?
So that sounds very good. Say it again.
You could just keep putting squares till there's no space left.
Keep putting, yeah, do it.
Okay. So I have to start in the middle, do you think?
Probably.
So I'm going to start with quite a big one in the middle.
This fits in with a lot of suggestions in the last 10 minutes. The windmill.
I'm done for.
Where would you like your smallest square to be? It's got to be a smallest.
Corner?
If it's in the corner, then we're going to be stuck. We're going to get a corridor into which you're going to have to drop other squares the same size.
Middle?
Middle of an edge or middle of the whole thing?
Middle of the whole thing.
Good. So the smallest square is going to go somewhere like the hub of a windmill, somewhere in the middle. Good. Now what? Yes?
Just a thought. No matter what, even if we put the smallest square in the middle, there's going to have to be two squares beside it. So no matter what, the smallest square is always going to end up in a corner, no matter how you configure this. If all the space is going to be taken up, it's going to have to be touching other squares, which means it's going to be in a corner by default.
You're saying we're just pretending that there's no problem here if we start building out from that smallest square as you go toward the edge. You're going to run into the same old problem.
Exactly.
Looking as if that we've gotten almost a proof that this can't be done. Because there's Ellen making a windmill of less and less small or differently sized squares, but not smallest. And we've got a windmill, but it's as if we're just trying to shut our eyes to the edge problem. We're going to
eventually we'll hit the edge and we'll have a space. Is it going to end up happily?
Suppose we go right back to the beginning. We had a rectangle. We put in one line and we got a square and a rectangle. Now, if you just rubbed out that square, you'd have a rectangle just like you started with. So you do it again. Every time you do it, you're going to end up with a rectangle left over. You cannot finish with a square. If you can, we should be able to do it almost immediately.
That's nice. So you're saying, with the limitation that it's got to be a finite number of squares, we're almost convincing ourselves that with that approach anyway, biggest square and so on, because we always end up with a rectangle, always the same kind of problem, it'll have to be an infinite number of squares, if that. So that's sounding like a proof that we can't tile a rectangle with a finite number of different sized squares, at least if we started with biggest square and so on. However, the approach that we've got here had a little square in the middle. Maybe just that difference would give an iota of hope that it could be done? Or are we kidding ourselves?
Well, at least our leftovers don't look like a rectangle. Our leftovers look like a mess.
Let's take a vote. How many people feel it can be done at this point? How many people feel this can be done with a finite number of squares? One vote. Why?
Why don't you put all the big squares on the outside, just put one little one in the middle and sort of build out to more.
It's a nice combination of ideas. Put big squares on the outside, a little square in the middle, and then
I like.
It's not going to be a small square. Or, yeah, it's going to put it around.
Okay. Okay.
I like that swoosh idea.
Yes. Yes. That's nice. Now, what do you think? Possible? Yes.
This is impossible to tile a rectangle with one square, and every square you put down is going to create at least one more rectangle. Since an L shape is two rectangles, it's impossible to do with a finite number of squares.
Okay. So now, that's a really nice statement of a very clear intuition. If we're going to be tiling a rectangle, by the way, there are still those squares, starting with a square to deal with. If you're going to be tiling a rectangle, you're going to continually have that problem. You're not going to be able to do it because you're just putting off the inevitable. You're putting off the bad news until you get into the corner.
So someday you will end up with an L, and that day will be your last.
Right. So here it is. It's 5 of 8, and you feel pretty convinced, almost all of you, that this can't be done. Where it is tiling a rectangle or maybe a square with a finite number of squares of different sizes. I suggest that we do, yes?
I would say if you can fold up squares to make it more
three-dimensional. Oh, that's a beautiful idea. If you're having trouble
with
two dimensions.
Can we get three dimensions instead of two?
What this gentleman suggests is, could we somehow build up, it goes back to the idea that came up very early on about overlapping rectangles, maybe build up into a third dimension where we can then look down, or somehow that will help us in two dimensions. It's a very, very good strategy in mathematics to move to a more general realm, and then that might help. Tremendous idea. Another possible strategy, yes?
If we were to take the total square footage of the rectangle, and then create out of that by square rooting everything, the total number of squares that would fit into that total square foot area.
Okay.
Then you would have a jigsaw that you know that the pieces, total square footage of the pieces would equal the total square footage of your original rectangle.
That's great.
Then the job would be to put it together.
Ah, right.
and to get all the squares to be different sizes.
You've certainly got a nice figure, a nice quantity there, the square root of the of a number. There's the geometric issue that comes into that algebraic issue, the question of how do you then shape, how do you cut out these shapes of different sizes. I have a suggestion for another kind of strategy in mathematics, which is giving up. In a creative way. What if we tile a rectangle with different size rectangles? Not what we wanted. Not actually what we wanted. But who knows? Like your idea of moving up to the third dimension, it might help us. Let's tile a rectangle with nine different rectangles.
I happen to have one I baked earlier.
You'll each get one. I think I need one myself, actually. Thanks. Oh, good. This has, we knew what we anticipated what you were going to say. We have some of your ideas in here. We've got a little thing, square, rectangle, in the middle, and rectangles around it, and we have certainly covered the entire rectangle with a finite number, 9, of different rectangles. Not quite what we wanted, but, you know, can't have everything in this world. If only they were squares, we'd be done. Or, if you can show that they couldn't all possibly be squares, we'd be done again. We'd show that, at least with these nine, it can't be done. If only.
Well, D looks sort of as if it were a square. And G isn't bad.
How do you say if only in that moment? How do you wish? How do you wish on a star? How do you say, I wish E were a square? What side length would it be? Three-dimensional? Shrink it. Okay. What if I have a suggestion? I need a suggestion. I need a really wild idea for how to say, look at this and magically turn them all into squares. Just by, they'll all turn into squares.
What's the biggest difference between squares and rectangles?
Sorry, what was that? Okay, the aspect ratio of a square is less than that of a rectangle. You want, in a square, you want all the sides to be the same length. You want height and width to be the same. What would you like the height and width of
E
to be?
The same.
Good, the same.
Any particular number that you have in mind?
We have some
of
those over here, please.
Oh, sure, sorry. On this simple question, the whole problem turns. Yes?
You take a line that goes from B to the right.
Yep.
And move it up so that E becomes a square.
You could do that, I agree. We could start making things bulge and shrink until E was a square.
But if E is a square, B isn't barely going to be a sliver.
I want to ask a really weird, abstract, odd question. Look at E. Look at E as it is on the page or on the screen, and make it in your mind into a square. In Shakespeare's Henry V, the prologue says, when I speak of horses, on your imagination work. See them printing their proud hooves in the dust. Look at E and see it as a square. What is the length of its side?
Seven
is certainly possible. What's another possibility? Yes. Oh, what a great idea. The length of E, this gentleman suggests, is G plus H minus D. Beautiful. You're one step ahead of me. Look at E by itself. On your imagination's work, make E into a square. And there's been one suggestion that its side length will be 7.
I'm making the suggestion that its side length be X.
What if you say the side length of E is going to be X? Each side will be X long. Well, that's certainly a square. Doesn't look like it. But we've moved from the visual to another kind of representation. Algebra, the eagle of algebra, has come to our help and said, okay, it doesn't look like a square, but each side of it is X long. Why don't you make H Y long? Each side of H will be Y. Now, your idea. Your idea, gentlemen in the front row, if E is X by X and H is Y by Y, can you tell me anything about F as a square?
X plus Y.
X plus Y. Fantastic. Are we getting somewhere?
How many people think this can't be done? Tell me something about B.
2x plus y.
2x plus y. What would you like to do next? I? No, do I? Sorry, say it again? 2y plus, x plus 2y, great. G? X plus 3y. What about D? Can we do D? Why 3y? D is going to be... Great. So that gives you... G plus H minus E, X plus 3y plus y minus X. Tricky stuff. 4y. Does everybody see that? I don't want to go racing ahead.
Back to the E is equal to D, G plus H minus D.
What should we do now?
Yes.
Which one?
C.
C is X plus 7Y. These are all squares. That's how long each one is on a side. What have we got left? A is what? A is X plus 11Y. Hey. Terrific. Now, if this is really a rectangle, if this is really a rectangle, the top edge and the bottom edge have to be the same. Are they? Top edge is 3X plus 12Y. Is that right? And the bottom edge is 3x plus 12y. Yes, top edge and bottom edge have worked out to be the same. So far, so good. By the way, the vertical edges have got to be the same, right? Let's do the left-hand edge. 2x plus 18y. Here comes the result of your hard work. So I give you a part of the bundle and we were able to read your mind. Sorry? You're so right, and that's an important point. We arbitrarily started with 9 rectangles in that pattern. Had this been, we've done this with our math circle classes with 11 to 13 year olds, where we didn't have an hour and a half, but we had 10 hours. And there we didn't impose the pattern. Here it's only because it's 8:07 on April the 7th. You would have come up with this eventually if you hadn't run away in despair. The two vertical sides have got to be the same, the two short sides. 2x plus 18y, has to equal 4x plus 4y. Is that good news or bad? Bad. Yes? Good. So this is actually good news. We're going to solve, we'll get all our x in one basket, all our x on one side. So 2x equals, you said, 14y. Are there any numbers, whole numbers, x and y, which satisfy that equation? You know, why don't we simplify a little bit, divide both sides by 2. X equals 7y. Are there any whole numbers, x and y, which will fit into that? You're all saying, I just can't hear it. Zero. And the entire problem in the rectangle shrink to nothing and disappear. Yes, are there any other numbers, x and y, which work? I agree, you can tile a 0x0 rectangle with a whole bunch of non-congruent squares. Yes?
7 and 1?
7 and 1. Let x equal 7. Let y equal 1. Go back to the diagram you've just gotten, or the one you see. Replace the unknowns, the variables, x and y, by those numbers. And, miracle of miracles,
our little e is going to be 7, and h is going to be 1, and d is going to be 1. And if it all works out in arithmetic,
9 squares. By going to the visual, retreating from it, from squares to rectangles, going away from the visual to the abstract, to the wished for, to imagination, calling them x and y, seeing what happens, letting the chips fly, coming up with an equation because the two vertical sides had to match, which forces, for example, 7 and 1 on us, and we have tiled a, 32x33 rectangle, almost a square, with 9 non-congruent squares. They said it couldn't be done. You notice? You said it could.
Great.
Oh, our applause to you. Tremendous work, very much the way mathematicians work. Collegially rather than competitively, going back and forth, despair, elation, elation right now, but it's not over yet. You notice the smallest square is not of a corner. You notice the windmill pattern, the spiral around it. You notice the second smallest, number 4. Again, not in the corner, but with a windmill.
And also with this, with a windmill around it, yeah. I see.
You raised a very good question. You said, well, okay, we gave you the 9, why not 8? Why not 13? Why not 6 rectangles? And we also gave them to you in that pattern. Okay, here's a different pattern with 9. It's still 9 rectangles. Play the same game with it. Replace probably 2 adjacent rectangles, give them side lengths x and y, and see what happens. You have to be a little careful here. Again, try this at home and see what happens if you would call the one in the upper left-hand corner x and the one in the lower right-hand corner y. You might not have been able to get the relations among the others. So there's some technique involved, some subtlety. But you would have come up with it. With that different 9 pattern, we get... Calling that big one x and one above it y, could have reversed them, obviously. You'll get that kind of relationship. Do the same thing again. The
bottom's 9x and 8y. The top is 7x and 13y.
Set those two equal, because they've got to be equal. Top and bottom have to be the same length. Solve, and you get...
a very strange shape, which is upside down.
A different tiling of a 61x69 rectangle, off a square now, with non-congruent squares. Now, hundreds of questions open up. How many other ways of arranging 9 tiles can you have to get some sort of rectangle paved? The answer is, that's it, just these 2. Amazingly enough. Could you tile any rectangle with 8, or 7, or 6, or 5? Let's go back to 1. If it was a square, and you wanted that original covering to be 1 square, yes. Otherwise, no. 2, probably not. But you could do it all algebraically giving X's and Y's, and you'll find out that you either get negative numbers or you'll get X having two different values. It's not going to work for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8. The smallest number of rectangles, of squares that can cover a rectangle, is 9. I saw a hand.
Question that comes right to my mind, though, is how do you arrive at that pattern, except by trial and error?
It's a great question. We'll get to the squares. I promise we'd get back to starting with a square. How do you come up with that pattern to start with? I think in exactly the same way we have worked tonight, only at greater length and with other kinds of insights, pushing things around in your mind.
We were very close to the sort of pushing around. If we knew roughly how many we needed of squares to go in, we had them in the middle, we had the windmills around, we'd seen you couldn't put them in the corners, and we've been working for a very, very short time. This problem was worked on by 6 mathematicians for a year.
So now, if 6 mathematicians are working for... here's a marvelous story. All mothers in the audience will appreciate this. In 1909, a Spanish mathematician named Morón came up with the 9 tiling that we did with you. And he gave his mother the 9 tiling, not with the numbers, but with the X's and the Y's, and it was she, his mother, not a mathematician, who came up with the other 9 tiling that we've shown you, and then he was able to prove, I think it was he, that those are the only 2 possible 9 tilings. It's the number of different ways of tiling a rectangle with 10 tiles. I think we've got some 10 tiles.
Is this a... Nope. Yes, there's a 10 tile.
a rectangle 104 by 108. By the way, it's interesting to me, I don't think anything is known about this, why do rectangles come out to be so close to squares? 108 by 104, not far off. However, we could tile a 1 by 2 rectangle with non-congruent squares. It wasn't done until 1969. There's a lot going on with this problem, and there's still a lot that's unknown. Is that our 1 by 2?
I think this is our... Yes, this is our 1 by 2 in the form of 135 by 270.
I hope that comes into focus.
Oh.
I haven't counted the number of rectangles, but it's a fair number. It looks like 21. Yeah, 21 rectangles. Again, done in the, well, there's your question. How do you arrange the rectangles to start with so you can then put in the X and Y's? A whole other story, which we could do with more time. Yes?
What strikes me about the process you've taken us through is that at one point I was convinced it could not be done, because I sort of bought the recursive argument that no matter what you do, you still have a rectangle or an L shape left,
yes,
and you're no better off. But now I can see, obviously, that it's easy to make an L shape with 2 squares.
Yes. I think you've hit on the head a phenomenon that's true of all mathematics. Before you can do it, it might be possible, it might be impossible, who knows. After it's done, you say, well, that was obvious. You hear this in every school classroom around the world every day when someone comes in and says, oh, I couldn't do that problem last night, I just couldn't do it. Someone and his friend says, you couldn't do that, that was obvious. Once you see it, a kind of amnesia sets in about all the trouble you had getting it. The fact that the majority of you, and certainly when we first looked at this problem, we felt, this cannot be done, and we're going to move toward a proof that it can't be done, in the course of which it got done. Yes? What was the question again?
What do the numbers in the squares represent? Is that like...
That's a side length. They represent side length.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
135 by 270, so a 1 by 2 square, a 1 by 2 rectangle. Oh, time is marching on.
Yeah.
Should we do some squares?
What?
Do a couple of
squares.
Can I
just show you a quick square?
So we see an actual tiling of squares. This is called squaring the square. And first done in 1940. And then in 1948, a man named Wilcox was able to square a square with 25 non-congruent squares, tiny one down toward the, you know, there's always that windmill pattern around the smaller ones. Question was, what's the smallest number of squares you could tile a square with? 25 worked, 24 worked.
My pile has gotten upside down.
Is this 24?
This is 24.
24 squares. It was proven by a Dutchman named De Vestien that 21 is the fewest number of squares, which non-congruent squares that you can cover a square with. Why 21? Sorry, the question? Other than
that's
more than
congruent.
One, more than one. No.
Everyone is congruent to himself. That's,
one,
that's a law.
From 1 to 21, kind of primitive ages.
Other shapes.
Other shapes. Could you tile a cylinder with non-congruent squares? A cylinder. Easy? Yes?
Easier.
What? It's easier. Why?
Because the rectangular tiling will work and you've got more dimensions of.
You've got more freedom. The way someone suggested earlier on, moving up to another dimension, which might give you more freedom. So moving into two dimensions with a cylinder, or you know what? You could take your 9 square tiling of a rectangle and just take that rectangle and bend it around. And you've got that very tiling of a cylinder. Okay, what about this? Hold on to your hats. Oh, I've got a couple of questions. Yes, there's a question over here.
Yeah, yes. What's the fewest number of squares that can tile any rectangle?
I don't think, 9. 9 is the fewest. And if you, this I think one can actually do without too much pain. Try it with 8, in any configuration of 8 you'd like, and put in the X's and Y's, and you'll get equations that are inconsistent, or you'll get a value for X or for Y that's less than 0. So there's a nice way of establishing the lower bound. What's not known is which rectangles can be so tiled. 31 by 32, yes. 135 by 270, yes. But given an arbitrary rectangle, can it be tiled with a finite number of non-congruent squares? Who knows? So I expect, along with the Pearl question, answers from you by the end of the evening. You can tile a cylinder, yes.
Getting back to the infinite tiling,
Here's
a question that I think is amusing. Take the kind of tiling that you make when you use the Fibonacci ratio. Take the kind of tile, the spiral tile, infinite tiling that you get with the Fibonacci rectangle, and then you can ask, are there other ratios that will give you the same pattern?
That's a great question.
The same pattern of tiling, and I think the answer is no.
I don't know, but I have the same feeling you have. Yeah, probably not. I don't know. It's fascinating. We were able to do a cylinder by taking the rectangle we were able to tile with 9 tiles and just bending it around. Take that sheet with the 9 tiles on it. Make it a cylinder, and then take the bottom edges and bend them around to make a donut. Can that be tiled with a finite number of non-congruent squares? You notice at this point, the boat has left the ship. That's very hard to see. Very hard to see indeed. The answer is yes.
Are you ready for the picture?
Ready for the picture. You're going to love this. First picture in color.
That is a tiling of a torus, of a donut, with two non-congruent squares. A green one?
It doesn't show up as green on the screen.
Oh, no.
Oh, dark, a dark one.
Take a quick look. It's a beautiful color green. A dark one and a light one.
Good.
Not so immediately recognizable. As a square until you start curling up that image in your mind so that this little piece glues on here and these pieces glue on to complete that square. And if I turn it this way, you may realize that there is an incredible free present included in the package.
This is the proof of a famous theorem mentioned in the very first line of the talk. Proof of the Pythagorean theorem on a donut, on a torus.
Here is your right triangle. There is the square on its hypotenuse. The green is the square on its short leg, and the completed white is the square on its long leg. And I hope from now on you'll all prove your Pythagorean theorems on toruses rather than boring old pieces of paper.
Before we end, I wanted to pick up one thing that the gentleman in the front row said about three dimensions. You now know that you can tile a rectangle, particular rectangle, with nine non-congruent squares. Could you fill a rectangular box with non-congruent cubes? Sounds hard? You know the answer already. Because of all the work we did.
Visualize a box.
There's a box. You're going to fill it with non-congruent cubes. The box has a bottom.
Drop a cube in.
On the floor of the cube of this rectangular box, there's going to be a pattern. The pattern will be one of these tilings of a rectangle. It'll have a smallest square on it, not at the edge. So there's a smallest square in the middle of the floor of this rectangular box. You build a little cube on it. Think New York City.
We've got to go up to the top of the box. Who's going to sit on top of the smallest square on the bottom?
Can't do it. This problem cannot be done in three dimensions. You cannot fill a rectangular box, square or otherwise, with non-congruent cubes. You might ask about other dimensions, but it's 8:27, so we're going to say thank you very much for being such a fantastic audience.